morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
Good morning and I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And what an exciting day it is. Emirates is launching luxury residences.
I was waiting. They're the first on the 1st of April. Because Emirates is like all over the world, right? And they release their April Fools the night before sometimes.
Yeah.
So, because I'm kind of like, what time? what clock do Emirates run on, right? When you've got planes all around the world and you're 12 hours behind and you're everywhere, you're wondering like their publishing schedule. When do they think it's 9 a.m.,
you know?
Like, we know it's Dubai, but they're such a global brand. So I actually checked their Instagram this morning and I didn't see that they had launched property addresses.
It was just a couple of minutes ago.
This is interesting,
right? Just a couple of minutes
ago. They came out with 10:20 today, but last year they've gone at different times. Last year they launched a cruise and their photo was beautiful on the outside Atlantis.
Right.
So this year it's luxury residences. Everyone's doing luxury residences. Why not Emirates?
Yeah, I know, right? That's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, I know this is April Fool's. However, the cruise first sounds like a great idea. Second of all, the residences.
Great idea.
You know, there's a lot of demand in Dubai. I personally am looking for an apartment. So Emirates.
Yeah.
Go for it. It looks actually pretty cool as well. Have you been fooled this April's?
I have actually.
Already?
At least I think I have.
Okay.
So Love in Dubai obviously put out but Love in Dubai did a collaboration with Taylor Swift. We launched Love in Dubai Anthem. I won't sing it. The lyrics are quite good. She's Love in Dubai.
Please sing it. I beg you to sing it.
I had the lyrics in front of me, maybe I will. let me see. I distracted, but no, I can't sing. So Taylor Swift launched a collab at Love in Dubai. And, you know, the AI these days, like, we got the lyrics to sync with her voice. We got a studio video of her. It's quite
amazing.
Cool. So yeah, a bit of fun. We always do one. We did. Elon Musk bought Love in Dubai for $100 million last year, and people still think it's true.
Yeah.
People
still ask me that today.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Because he bought Twitter and their kind of media or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like yeah, it's good. I mean,
it's a compliment that people believe that though.
A bit of a compliment. Like it is. I mean, it is a little bit of a compliment. But I remember going to a dinner and there was lots of CEOs there and they were like, we know what you're doing, Rich. It's not a shop window, but you're kind of like in a jokey way saying what your price is or whatever.
Yeah.
But every year with April Fools, like with brands, you know, Google started it. It's kind of fallen away and it's not as big in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually do it in any other loving cities because they don't care, right? Like they wouldn't get it in Saudi and they don't care. But we keep going with it.
And also people would get just really angry about that stuff, even if it's just a joke, right? In different cultures, it's like you can't joke, right?
Well, yeah, I think you can joke in local humor. Like, but I think it's a Western thing, April Fools, and people don't really know where it comes from. But we grew up with it. Like I remember, you know, our neighbors would tell us as kids that we have to wear big shiny colored clown dicky bows, and that's what we had to wear today. And like you always grew up with it. So in our family WhatsApp group, my brother in San Francisco and his wife, they a house that we knew well, a friend of mum's house, they put it in a WhatsApp group that they got an offer accepted for the house, and mum was like, that's April Fools or whatever. But it's like, it's one of those things that we all fell for it because it was quite smart how they did it. And it was like, no way, you're not going there, are you? Because we knew the owners or whatever.
Nice.
And then we all fell for it. But so those ones are kind of like believable a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the Taylor Swift one, we didn't catch as many people this year as last year because it was obviously AI.
Yeah.
And Emirates probably won't catch as many people. But I think a good brand, April Fools, kind of talks about, it's semi-believable, but talks about you, not the category. So Emirates aren't talking about airlines, and Love in Dubai isn't talking about Dubai, they're talking about us. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it would be cool if you guys did do a collaboration with Taylor Swift, and it would be cool if Emirates did go for this. I don't know, sometimes it's nice to like test the waters with an April Fool's thing.
True.
Anyways, let's talk about Swvl. There was an interesting LinkedIn post that the co-founder of Swvl put up. He said, nobody believed we would make it.
Yeah.
I love these startup stories and these kind of linked, you know, these companies that go through challenges and then I don't know. It's just it's nice to see the hustle behind it. You know, nobody believed we would make it, but now we're making it, sort of thing. So he said,
roller coaster ride, the swivel. Yeah,
yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, 2017, founded in Egypt, Mustafa Kandil, three guys, Mahmoud Nu, and I know Nu and Ahmed Sabah. Quickly gained popularity. So 2017 in Egypt. So the thing that was interesting, we obviously have an office in Egypt, and I think the macro story here, it's basically ride sharing company, but it's one Lubna that fits the market. So in an emerging market, the public transport's really poor, right?
Yeah.
And many people, like Cairo is a big city.
Especially in Egypt.
Yeah. But I think in many emerging countries or whatever, they don't have the infrastructure. That's part of the reason why they're not developed countries, right?
Yeah.
And then in Egypt, you have other factors. You have, it's a huge country. You have people who need affordable transport. So, you know, if you're from Alexandria, if you're from the south, if you're from somewhere else, and at the weekend, I often heard the guys saying that they need to go home and see their family.
Yeah.
And how they would get there, they can't pay for an Uber, they don't drive, there's no train, the bus system is unreliable. So Swivel spotted a gap in the market and did this sort of, it's like a private, you're booking your own bus,
yeah.
but you only pay like a dollar or whatever. So it just really worked. But the whole SPAC thing. So I remember meeting one of their founders, one of these guys, I wish I remembered which one, at STEP conference in Dubai last year. And it was literally the same time that Anghami went public.
Mm-hmm.
And they both hadn't had their bottom yet. So they were both a little bit like, we're cool, we're public, we're out here. We listed on NASDAQ, and he was telling me that they want to do a dual listing. They want to do a Dubai listing and a New York listing. And how he was talking, it sounded to me super technical on the financial thing. And then it all sort of bottomed. Like it looked like they were going to go bust. A bit like how Fetcher went bust.
Exactly. Everyone was talking about that. So the fact that they made it is remarkable. Yeah.
Yeah, and now the numbers are, they're profitable or something, right?
Yeah, I'll get to the numbers. I just want to talk a little bit about. So he said, I started Swivel when I was 24. I mean, just that alone, imagine starting a company at 24. Like, that's kind
quite
of brilliant.
Cool.
He said, I thought my biggest challenge would be, how can I make buses arrive on time in Cairo? How naive was I? In my wildest thoughts, I wouldn't have imagined how exhilarating this is going to be. A love I can't explain, and maybe this is what having a baby must feel like. It's just a really lovely post.
Yeah.
We got crushed so many times at Swivel, but damn, I am proud. I'm proud of how every single time everyone bet against us and how every single time we freaking prevailed. I feel like you must have felt like that at some point, because people do love to hate on Love in Dubai. I don't know. Do you relate a little bit?
It's
also a different model in media, what you're doing.
Yeah, I can't, honestly, love that. I can't relate. I think these guys are a different level. I think a tech, something that's so disruptive and basically doing what a government should do, you're providing transport for, you know, 100 million people. And they went into Kenya, Pakistan, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, all in a few years. 24-year-old kids from Egypt. Like, it's just, I'm not in their league. Like, they're amazing. So,
Yeah. He said, I know we have had many setbacks, and I know in every time nobody really believed we'll make it back, this fuels the fire inside all of us. I know we're destined to conquer the world. Swivel, I love you. Gosh, I wish I got a love message like that. You know? Anyway, so in March 2022, Swivel was previously valued at $1.5 billion. Entered the NASDAQ through a SPAC merger, just so people can get a little bit of context for that, starting at an offer price of $9.95 per share. It reported a $161 million loss in H1 2022, the same year. But in H1 last year, it achieved $2.1 million in net profits, despite almost 50% decline in revenues. Operating profit also improved to $13.4 million.
And they're doing that at a time where the Egyptian currency is being devalued. They're probably reporting in dollars. Like, it does take time for these. It's a tech-driven transportation service. It is basically a unique offering for Egypt and emerging markets, but it's kind of the Uber of the Middle East. But Kareem launched Kareem Bus. Like, they recognize that, like, not everyone is going to get in a car and pay for their own ride. Like, not everyone can afford a taxi. So to create that technology, you know, you can track the buses in real time. You can go from A to B. You can pay directly via the app.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing this people services, you know, in Lebanon where the car pulls up at the side of the road and you get in and there's four strangers in the back seat.
Yeah.
So like it's a service, how do you pronounce it? Service taxi?
I have no idea.
So it's basically like a communal taxi.
Right, exactly.
Where you, a bus, but the drivers don't have buses, so they have taxis. So you jump in and it's like, much, much cheaper. Mm. So this is kind of taking that concept and just kind of adding tech to it, know?
Yeah.
So they've done a really good job.
Yeah. Someone called Mohammed Ghanem said on LinkedIn, though, he's the GM of Vidscola, which does everything from consultancy to coaching, so agile transformation services. He kind of did a little analysis on Swivel, and everyone is talking about this post. He talked a lot about the stats and how Swivel finally turned profitable after 2 years of losses, la 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 la. And then he talks about all of the struggles that they've been through. They laid off more than 400 employees, reduced senior management compensation from $13.4 million to $344,000. And then he put in brackets, really, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Overall expenses were reduced from $53 million to $5 million. And they focus on the B2B business, allowing their tech to clients offering their technology basically to clients who would like to plan and operate their fleet routes. So far, he said the above statistics on a unicorn that was considered one of the most successful startups in the region.
Yeah.
This shift in focus and strategy underscores the risks associated with blindly pursuing funding cycles without delivering tangible value to the business and its clients.
It's a hard thing to please everyone. It's a hard thing to get everything right.
Like, yeah.
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You have to raise money.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do something like this, everyone, Facebook, Google, they all raise money,
Yeah. Someone commented and said, always makes me wonder why can't companies run businesses with such optimization in the first place? But I guess growth is blinding public markets to the rescue.
Yeah. I think this is, I agree. I think businesses should be operated lean from the start, but... Mm-hmm. If you're disrupting a whole category and you're building something, it needs investment, needs cash. It's just like saying, if you're building the Palm Jumeirah, why wasn't it profitable from day one? Mm-hmm. It takes time. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're building a newspaper, I think Disneyland, the stories of Euro Disney in Paris being non-profitable for 10 years, so you shouldn't do it, so it's badly run.
Same thing with Netflix, by the way. Netflix was a totally not successful story.
No, it took ages, right? Yeah. So just because you have to make cutbacks and go profitable, does that mean that you were negligent in the start? Maybe it does. Maybe some people were bad managers.
If you're 24, how wise can you be? You know what I mean? If you're 24 years old launching a business, like, I feel like you're bound to make some mistakes. But the lesson here is that they actually made it.
They're getting there. They're getting there. Hopefully they'll continue. Like the post seems mature. They're in their early 30s now. We had a chat last week about Uber in Egypt, and we talked about safety and things like that, and that Swivel need to manage that as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are captains, there are drivers, there people are getting into buses with people and stuff like that, and we see how difficult Uber are facing the crisis that they have at the moment in Egypt. So hopefully Swivel can kind of navigate all that data privacy and everything. When we go to Egypt, when we do maybe Rise Up in Cairo and a tech conference there, Lubna, let's get the Swivel app out and let's give it a go.
Let's do it.
All right.
Cool.
Cheaper expenses. Yeah.
Yeah, cheaper. Yeah. Great point. Lazard is the largest manufacturer of jewelry in the Middle East, from the Middle East. It's a Saudi company. It's listed on Tadawul. It saw a 10% decrease in profits last year. Last year, its net profits for its jewelry division decreased by 9.94% year on year, dropping from $9.1 million to $8.2 million. I mean, they're still making good money. Revenues also dropped by 4.13% to nearly $500 million, down from $530 million in the previous year. They're still proposing to pay dividends to shareholders. It's a bit confusing, isn't it?
that they're paying dividends and they're not as profitable?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
So they're proposing to pay dividends, but the profits have dropped. I mean...
But are they loss-making? Because if you have profits, you can pay dividends. I think, you know, if you're a jewelry company, then why wouldn't you pay dividends? I think tech companies don't pay dividends because they're not profitable yet, or other companies don't pay dividends because they want to reinvest. Mm-hmm. Like Berkshire Hathaway doesn't pay dividends, you know, but other companies don't pay dividends and you get the value from the increase in the share price. Mm-hmm. Obviously, investors love dividends.
The share price is down in this case as well.
Yeah, this is the thing. If your share price is dropping and you're paying dividends, more people will invest. Because they like the value of they like to get dividend back. So the value. So as an investor, that share is worth more. So if a company's been paying dividends, okay. What's the example last week of? I'm not thinking of Apple. Facebook, when we talked about them, right? Yeah. They announced their first dividend ever since their listing in 2012, 2013, and the share price rocketed because the investor wants that cash back. You know, bonds, an investment instrument has, in equities, it's got double value if it's got dividend. You know, which is the one that we heard last week in Dubai? Let me see where it is. Okay, DWA announced 3.1 billion in dividends. 3.1 dirham billion in dividends. And 12-month dividend yield is 5%. Like, that's unheard of. That's like a solid investment. Yeah. So no wonder, like, you know, 25 billion in annual revenue, EBITDA over 14.7 billion, the highest in their history. So no wonder there is huge interest in these companies. But I think, you know, it is surprising to me that jewelry business in Saudi isn't doing that well.
Go ahead.
Because jewelry and, you know, because the economy is doing well, and we do seem to think that those companies should perform well.
So when it comes to like diamonds, the price of diamonds has dropped. People are buying not mined diamonds, but lab-grown diamonds. So the jewelry industry is actually suffering quite a lot with inflation and all that. Have you not been looking at jewelry recently?
I'm not an expert on jewelry, Lubna. I think there's a hidden joke there, but like, let's move on to the next story.
We're moving on so quickly. Okay, let's do this.
You're dead after the show.
So Abu Dhabi has been drawing increased interest from asset managers. I'll go through this real quick and then we'll talk about this. It's really, really exciting stuff for the stock markets, for the cities. It was all about Dubai, and now the really interesting happenings going on in Abu Dhabi. SS&C Technologies Holdings, a hedge fund and private equity administrator, opened a new office in Abu Dhabi, they're overseeing $2 trillion in assets. GQG Partners also shifted their global headquarters to Abu Dhabi, citing the region's rising financial appeal. Regulatory clearance for its Abu Dhabi investment office, the first outside the U.S., has been secured. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
This is like what, Lubna, we had iftar with Hussein Sojani last week.
Yes.
And he sat beside you and I, and he told us he knows a couple of billionaires who are moving here. And we're like, oh, yeah, that's great. Cool, they're going to buy a house. But he's like, no, what it means is, he was talking related to talent, but it means is they're moving the private offices here. And, you know, the people that you hire at private offices to manage that wealth are highly intelligent graduates, right?
Exactly.
So this is so interesting. You know what's also interesting is that, like, Abu Dhabi is kind of, I may be jumping the gun here, but it's kind of like the Switzerland of the region in terms of, like, if you're opening a private office and you're a billionaire, they're kind of branding themselves as
right,
that. Like,
with
we talked about the price of the billionaire pads and the stuff like that. Like, you know, Dubai is kind of like, not for the hustle or the fast pace or the glitz and the glam and the startup-y. Saudi's a different type of foreign direct investment. It's more Arabian culture. It's more long-term. It's more betting on the Saudis. Whereas Abu Dhabi seems to be that, you know, it could be strategic, that livability, that kind of more affluent elderly citizen who has this huge wealth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like
absolutely.
Like Dubai has... you know, we saw the statistics of like the number of millionaires in the world that moved here during the pandemic. Like, so someone who has $1 million or 2 or 3 million, like the kind of this sort of like affluent, but not super high net worth. Like in Dubai is a lot of them, right? Like 35-year-olds made a bit of cash, whatever. But if Abu Dhabi is going for these high net worth, and if they're moving their family offices, it bodes well for the whole region. But it's quite, it's, if they're doing this on purpose, it's quite smart.
Yeah. It's also that, you know, yes, Saudi is more long term, but, you know, Saudi is taking a lot of the talent. Saudi is, you know, offering a lot. It's really the competition there between Saudi, you know, between Riyadh and Abu Dhabi is really interesting and kind of exciting. To see, it's kind of having like a, I don't know, like a best friend that you kind of you know, compete with.
Do you think if you grow up in an Arab country, do you think, and you're ambitious and you've got a 10-year runway, you've just graduated? Because remember the Arab youth surveys. And like they would poll people across like North Africa and the Levant region, and which country you're most likely to visit. We should actually look at that. And a lot of them said UAE in the last few years.
Yeah.
But I wonder, like, the UAE is good for expats, it's good for international residents. But I wonder if in the in a few years we'll see that people are picking Saudi because it's more Arabic, it's more, you know, but it will have even more opportunities at some level because it's a bigger market.
I mean, you said the other day that you wish that you had moved to Saudi years ago. So, I do think a lot of people, I personally wouldn't, but I know that there are a lot of people who would move to Saudi, and rightly so. So, the UAE and Saudi have taken the top spots globally in entrepreneurship.
Nice segue, rankings.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're going full throttle in their competition as well. Like, they are really seizing,
seizing the moment. So, where did this report come from?
The Global Entrepreneurship Monitor report for 2023 and 2024.
Crazy.
So the UAE came first, and Saudi Arabia came in a strong third place. So this report is highly regarded by international institutions like the World Bank and the UN, and it assesses entrepreneurial ecosystems across the globe. So it's not a regional report.
And they ranked what number?
The UAE was one, and Saudi was three.
That's huge.
Yeah, the UAE for launching businesses globally at number one, and also for an impressive physical infrastructure, it ranked number three worldwide.
That's impressive.
Really impressive.
UAE, we kind of expect it now, but Saudi, that's really impressive. Yeah,
I mean, they are doing everything that they can do to tell people, you know, to move there and open businesses there.
Yeah, I really, I know you're talking to start a show, but I really like the Emirates. The design of the residences is very nice. Kind of looks a little bit like Burj Al Arab, but a little different. And look at the way they have the plane on the runway over
this.
It's quite nice.
Exactly. Yeah. Would be nice if they actually did launch that, wouldn't it? Like, yeah, nice. Anyways, let's talk about something that doesn't normally happen, but probably should happen more often. A, because it's exciting. B, because why not? One of the richest people in the world, and in India particularly, Indian business titans Mukesh Ambani and Adani have traditionally fierce rivals have joined forces for the first time for a power project, marking a surprise shift in strategy. Would you ever join forces with your arch nemesis?
I don't have an arch nemesis. Thankfully, but I get the question.
That was a trick question right there, yeah.
So I think like partnerships, I think partnerships are really good in business. I remember listening to the Satya Nadella book of how he turned around Microsoft, and they were like, everyone hated them and they were just all dominant and monopoly, and they just embrace partnerships. They do partnerships with the cloud, they do partnerships with this, with that, with everything, and it really grew their business. It's kind of an abundance mindset. So, you know, rather than a zero-sum game, I think having being open to partnerships is very good business. But I have a lot of conversations with a lot of people. The founder of Podster, that sort of podcast network. There's Vuk and there's Ivan, two guys from Serbia, and they were in it here the other day, or Ivan was in here the other day, and they've just opened in Singapore. A real success story in media in Dubai.
Really? They've opened in Singapore?
Yeah, they have seven studios in Dubai, four in Singapore.
They already have seven studios in Dubai?
Yeah.
What? You're joking.
Yeah. Well, kind of four in one building and then two in one.
Because I knew them when they had just one.
In BBC building in Media
City.
Yeah,
exactly.
So what happened was they were making podcasts for other companies.
Yeah.
And the companies wouldn't pay on time and the companies weren't media companies, so they didn't approve stuff and they didn't really know what a podcast was.
Yeah.
And then they were getting requests because they had all the best equipment. Mm. This guy, Ivan, he's a character. He used to be the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in Serbia.
Really?
So his background is IP and TV and everything. Oh my gosh. A character, but really funny guy, really nice guy. So now, then they started selling the services and the booking. They're in the real estate game because it's about like booking per hour, but then they help you with the audio.
Right.
And how many, from the studios in Dubai, put a rough figure of how many regular podcasters they have. How many podcasters are in Dubai? Just with Podster, never mind all the other people.
Just with Podster.
Yeah, so never mind all the individuals or whatever, but just with Podster, how many podcasters do you think?
I don't know, 500?
A thousand.
He
was like, when he started and when he got to 100, he's like, there's 100 people who make a podcast all the time, just who pay them out of their own pocket, 400 dirhams an hour, 500. 1,000 podcasters. It's exploded.
That's insane, though.
It is insane.
I mean, I know
who listens to this?
I know. Who listens to that? Gosh. Yeah. I mean, I know that during Corona, like the pandemic really fueled the, you know, because I used to listen to podcasts all the time, right? Like ages ago, years ago, my older sister used to listen to them. Radiolab. One of my favorites. And now all of a sudden, like everyone thinks that they can start a podcast. It actually makes me angry. It pisses me off a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? Like, what podcasts do you listen to? Because I don't listen to any podcasts that are by.
I don't listen to these individual motivator ones. Maybe I should, but because I listen to audiobooks, but I listen to all the media podcasts. So Peter Kafka used to have a really good one, Recode Media, Vox Media. Brian Morrissey has a good one called The Rebooting Show. And then there's the DigiDay podcast to interview media people in the US. The Puck is a good platform in the US. They've got Media Mondays. It's really gossipy. It's really nice. And then some of the motivation ones, like Wondery, do all those kind of business wars and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I actually listen to podcasts like in a newsy type way, like 30, 40 minutes every week. And, you know, this is like this show, right? Like this style of show. This is the type of show I listen to. Mm. But then I marry it with regional geopolitics stuff. Mm-hmm. So every time The Daily, the New York Times, the biggest podcast in the world, every time The Daily does... I'm not interested in U.S. politics or whatever, but every like 5 or 10 episodes, they do one thing about the region. Mm-hmm. So, but they're very topical and they do it in such a cool style.
Yeah.
But so when the terrorist attack happened in Russia, in Moscow, they would explain that in 40 minutes. And they do it in a way because they're utilizing their resources. They've got a bureau chief in Moscow. They know what they're doing. They record the way where they're picking up the phone or when the Beirut blast happened or when the genocide in Gaza or the terrorist attack. Like when all these things happen, they cover it in such a nuanced way. I really like it. It's a really cool format. And I think that the regional media outlets, the broadsheets, should be doing more of this, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I was going to say that I love Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. It's a brilliant podcast, but now I feel really silly because it's not that kind of a newsy podcast. But it's really cool. He talks to kind of, you know, everyone from businessmen to you know, rock stars, pop stars. Yeah, and he has a really soothing voice, and I think like voices are so important when you're doing a podcast, right?
True.
It's just his voice.
Like your voice, love that.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that, and I always hated my voice, so it's nice.
It's a podcast voice.
Nice to hear that. Yeah.
Who knew? Like, why did we get onto this topic? We were talking about something else.
Talking about fierce rivals, Mukesh Ambani and Adani.
Yeah, but just one other thing on podcasts, because there was a big write-up in The Guardian. We were talking about the other night about a really famous podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
I've escaped the name again. And
was it a woman, you mean?
We were talking about.
Oh, Huberman.
There's Huberman who had an issue around, careful what I say, but there was allegations against him for misogyny.
For being a playboy, for being a narcissist, for cheating on his girlfriend. Surprise, surprise, nothing surprises us ladies anymore. So yeah, basically why people attacked him, and it's actually a brilliant article. A lot of people attacked the journalist for, like the article is obviously not really objective. It's written very sarcastically. So Huberman basically is a scientist, but he's a really good looking, really charismatic scientist that goes really deep into the details of science and neurology and all that. Shebang, basically. But he makes it really interesting. People love listening to him because he's good looking and charismatic. So they like his voice and they like to watch his videos, basically. But yeah, he came under fire because he was telling people how to live, giving them advice about a healthy life, mental health, physical health. So he focuses on mental health just as much as he focuses on physical health. And they said, well, when this came out that he allegedly abused his ex-girlfriend while she was getting IVF, whatever. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of it. But they said, well, you're a hypocrite, so why should we listen to you?
It's more cancel culture, but it is interesting because
he's not going to be canceled, though. He's just going to become more famous after this.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah. The Jay Shetty story. So someone looked into him, not an investigative reporter, just a journalist who Esquire asked him to write a research piece on Jay Shetty. And when he started looking, he said, there's more here. Yeah. And The Guardian funded it, and it took a year. And it's kind of an expose piece. Mm-hmm. And there's a legal notice now against The Guardian for this piece. But it's created this sort of wider theme of like, investigating the influencers, and there's this sort of vibe at the moment of like, you know, look into these people a bit more. So maybe we can do that here.
One particular name that I would love to to look into. I'm not going to mention it, but yeah, absolutely.
I think we should just leave it alone. But I think there is something there on a macro theme of influencers. Going back to the point about partnering.
Also, if anyone listening has anything for us, please do get in touch. Lubna@weareaugustus.com. Thanks.
Thanks, bye. Yeah, look, I think the journalism has a place, and you know, looking into influencers and stuff like that. Like, the thing is, these people do have power now, and they've got a lot of reach as well. And also, it's a part of building their story, and it's interesting to see how they react to things.
Exactly.
Like how, you know, because he...
You took the words out of my mouth, yeah.
Because Jay Shetty just panicked, and he denied it, and now he's doing legal. Well, maybe you should come out and say, well, the story that I told at the start of attending a lecture and becoming a monk, you know, maybe I did fib a little or
embrace
whatever.
Embrace it. Yeah, just embrace it, you know?
Yeah, because you know, even if someone scrutinizes how Love in Dubai rose or something or whatever, like, you will own up to things.
Exactly.
Not that we ever did anything. There was something. By the way, we had a story over the weekend where there was a fire on, there was a big fire. You can listen to the Love in Dubai show because Casey and Farah covered it really well this morning. And it's an ongoing sort of accident, and it's been reported on. So I won't go into too much detail on it. But CAFU, the...
I feel like Love in Dubai should start paying us to be
promoting it.
To have a plug-in on the Smashy Business Show.
Yeah, and vice versa. We should get more plugs on their show.
Exactly.
But CAFU released a statement, and we were in touch with their legal team yesterday and everything. They're really nice. They were in the middle of a crisis. So I got that they were in the middle of a crisis and how you... But it was just... You know, they did come out with a statement, and not everyone does all the time, and I commend that. But how they manage the statements, and they, you know, London, they released the statements, right? And then they sent another one, and we post both statements.
Yeah.
And they're like, the first one wasn't approved. And we're like, yeah, but you sent it to the media.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, but we were sent another one. And we're like, cool, but like, we're not your internal department.
Exactly. Like, thank you.
If it leaves your house... if you leave your house, like, hello, you know?
It's incredible how many people say, yeah, but, you know, that's not good for my business, what I said in this interview. And I'm like, yes, I know. However, I'm not responsible for your business.
Yes, I know what you said.
I love it. People always go like, I never said that. I'm like, actually, it's recorded.
Yeah.
And they're like, why is it recorded? And I'm like, because I mentioned it in the beginning of the interview.
So this is the thing. Like, people need to be trained, and they need to know that their words can be damaging. Their words, not ours.
Exactly.
Their words,
exactly.
You know? But anyway, I think it is commendable. And I know that it's sensitive, and I know there's stuff there, but like, it's just interesting to, you know, we're talking about influencers or content creators growing up. We're talking about Swivel growing up. We're talking about Cafu, which has been an incredible success.
Incredible,
it's
yes.
the envy of the world that they exactly. have such a good service. And it was such a brave move because the CEO was on Smashy way back, and they said they were. I was fascinated because he was a B2B company.
I know.
He provided fuel for service stations, and he went B2C with an app, and it worked, and it's incredible, you know. So this should be applauded, and I do personally believe that they're in the middle of a crisis, but they will come back stronger.
Absolutely.
And they'll learn from it, and they'll get over it.
Yeah. But what an incredible story, Cafu. They deliver fuel wherever you are, the emergency fuel within 30 minutes. Like, it's really an incredible. Because I remember when I first covered them years ago, when they first started, he was Entrepreneur of the Week at the magazine where I worked. So just to see where they have
come. Yeah, what are magazines?
So far.
Sorry.
Which magazine?
What are magazines?
What are magazines? Yeah.
It's a French term. It's like a cafe, is it? I don't know this word. I haven't seen one in decades. Cool. Let's go. What's next?
What's next? Richard, we're
done.
We already passed the time, but I love your enthusiasm. Richard's like, I'm in the mood today to take people down. who's on the hit list next?
Yeah.
No, I love it. Listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll have more juicy gossip for you tomorrow.
Or follow us on Instagram, on social media, on websites, on apps, and streaming technologies, things people actually consume media
Not magazines, apparently.
Over and out. Bye.